Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome back to the Legend Rouge Cycling Podcast, the recap of Basque Country Stage 5 from Vitoria Gasteiz to Amorebieta at Sharno. But the big news was in yesterday's stage on Stage 4, which was supposed to be the first real GC stage, where there was a massive crash in the descent of the Olaita climb down to the Unchilla climb. And I've never seen a crash take out so many GC, the top yeah. four GC contenders out of the top five in one race. And Vingegaard, Evenepoel, Roglic, Vine, Kras, Quinn all had to abandon the race. I'm not sure if there's any other abandoned, but they were obviously the four big GC guys, as well as some of the four most injured. When we first, the descent was, it's quite at the start of the descent, but when the breakaway went through, we saw that Bergodeau, who'd been in the break of four or five, had run off on this descent on the exit, and I think he stayed up in the forest. It's a right-hand sweeping turn where it turns and then straightens up a bit and then turns again in on itself. Not that sharp, very high speed, and then the exit basically wasn't a cliff or anything. It was a runoff into a field off camber sloping down away from the road, and had a culvert in the gutter. Well, not even in the gutter. There was just a massive culvert, a concrete embankment or concrete ditch, quite in a V shape, quite deep, and also large boulders scattered around the culvert or ditch, or however you want to call it, as well as trees. And that was the exit of the corner after the apex. And so we saw Bergodeau run aground there without getting off the bike, so he held it up, but probably they weren't going quite as quick in the breakaway. And then we see the helicopter shot of just bodies essentially scattered all through this corner. And how did you see it, Benji? There's also some of the Basque local riders also had some local knowledge that you couldn't see about the corner.
Yeah, first of all, the first reaction is fuck. He's like, you see riders laying on the road and you get immediate flashbacks of moments that have happened in the past where we've literally lost riders in the sense, and I don't like going through that again. And we have images of, like, when it comes to the images, let's get this out of the way first. I'm fine with them showing a crash once, twice, repetitions of crashes in necessary angles, stuff like that. But I don't necessarily need 17 replays of close-ups of riders barely moving on the floor. That's too much for me. And then the broadcaster decided to put some action music on the crash replays, and I didn't think the replay and the whole broadcasting was handled the way it should be handled. That out of the way first. But like, when you see Vingegaard laying there, he's barely moving. I'm worrying. No, I don't really, like, at that point, you don't care, or I don't care about, okay, is he going to the Tour de France or not? I'm thinking, can he cycle again? Because if a cyclist is not moving on the floor or barely moving, then I'm immediately worried like that. And Jay Vine, literally the same. Remco was one of the ones that was up very quickly. So I was like, okay, looks like a collarbone. Should be relatively fine. Kras looked pretty bad as well. Sean Quinn sat up, so I wasn't overly worried for him necessarily. Roglic started walking pretty swiftly. So it were the ones, the Vingegaard crash, the Vine crash, the Kras crash. Those were the ones I was really worried about. And we had updates afterwards. We had updates from the injuries that the riders have sustained. Roglic, no fractures, but did not finish the race. Jonas Vingegaard, fractured collarbone, 3 broken ribs were the initial assessment yesterday. This morning, that was added on to it, a pneumothorax, which I think is like when your lung kind of collapses.
No, it's a perforation in the lung. It can lead to lung collapse, but no, it's like a hole in the lung.
Oh, okay. Pulmonary contusion. I think that's your lung getting a hit, is my guess.
Bruised lung, yeah.
Remco Evenepoel has a fractured collarbone and a broken scapula. I expected collarbone. It sucks that the scapula is in addition to that, because that will have a longer recovery than just the collarbone. Jay Vine is probably, together with Cross, the worst off. Jay Vine with a cervical and two thoracic spine vertebrae fractures. Fortunately, no neurological issues were reported yesterday. When it comes to Cross, pneumothorax again, multiple fractured ribs, two dorsal vertebrae fractures, Sean Quinn, concussion, sternum fracture. Like, sorry, but cycling sucks in moments like that. Cycling is a sport that I love watching, but when that happens, I don't want to watch. It's as simple as that. And then just to get this over with, another crash happens early in today's stage. Michelanda brought away with stretcher again. And you were talking about the environment of the crash. Bilbao and I think Biscara on social media, noting that there's tree roots that are under asphalt in this area that makes the asphalt a bit wobbly. But okay, the organization did well at highlighting that the corner was dangerous beforehand. But in my head, one of the things is I can't imagine that there's 100 corners like this within the exit, a concrete ditch. So I would expect it to be financially possible to add padding to corners like that. No?
Yeah, that's the thing. Like you see in the front on images when it first starts, and you see Remco's head just bobble, like fully porpoise, as if he's going over cobbles. And it takes him off his line, and they're already too late to break. So it is a dangerous section of road, because when the riders look at it, they think they can make it through at a certain speed, because it also looks like a normal road surface. And then bang, they're going over tree roots and stuff that takes them off their trajectory, and it's too late to break. Bilbao said maybe we go too fast. Like what? And I agree. Why is there such a huge fight? 40Ks to go to the finish. On the not the biggest GC day, the next climb is not going to be a pivotal climb. There's a valley, false flat valley before the next climb. It's ironically, and the guys are four wide.
Ironically, the reason for the positioning is because teams might see it as a danger to descend, and they say, let's get to the front, let's make sure we are at the front. And then the other team says, let's make sure we are at the front to make sure we're not behind crashes. But then you get the waves of speed that just go faster and faster and faster. And that's one thing, but we also got to think, got to keep in mind, I saw a stat the other day that the Tour of Flanders this year was 4 km/h faster than in 2017. Like, there's innovation happening in this sport. Shit hits the fan earlier. The races are faster. Are the safety precautions in the race handled according to the speed changes? Is that a question we can look
that's
at?
That's what Matua said. He said, everyone, if you don't have a 56-10, 56 up front, 10 on the back, you won't follow on the descents now. Like, you see the speed at which they hit that corner. They're going 80 on a Basque twisty corner. So I agree with what Bilbao said, elements of it, and other riders have echoed that. But what you alluded to, Benji, as well, these are not... there are not actually that many dangerous descents or corners in this race, because you cannot barrier off every corner, every exit for 200Ks, six stages in a row. Unreasonable, unfeasible. Bjorg Lambrecht crash, for example, I think it was on a random stretch of flat road. It's like a freak accident, unfortunately. But here, there was two descents of note in this whole stage.
Yeah,
and then how many corners on those two descents have a culvert, a concrete ditch on the exit, and trees, and some of those guys would have been going through those trees. Marc Soler fucking and Remco bunny hopped the culvert at like 70. They bunny hopped it, but they would have been going through those trees, thinking, "Ooh, this could be bad." And there's boulders there. If you slide, hit a boulder like that, so. Yeah, I think it's a very, like, there has to be a nuanced discussion about it, in that, okay, why are the speeds higher? Why is there so much pressure? But also then, okay, I'm sorry, but I don't think every corner, and there's not so many, have so many dangerous elements that if it, and by the way, when lightning strikes twice, Benji, when the brake guy goes off the corner, and then the peloton will stack up in the corner, and how many times a year, okay, there's lots of crashes, how many times a year are there this many guys this badly hurt? Then I'm sorry, it's not a normal corner or a normal exit.
I fully agree, but there's also other things that come into effect. In addition to that, I swear I checked a replay, I think 20, 25 times, and there was a Trek rider involved. I think it was Natnael Tesfatsion, who also abandoned before today's race, but I don't recall there being fractures involved for him. But it looked like his front tire like had an issue as he had hit a wobble on the road in that same corner. So maybe there was a serious wobble, but I swear his tire collapsed or something during that corner. But I could be wrong, but that's how I perceived that corner as well from the Trek rider's perspective. But then we look at all the other things when it comes to safety. There's been numerous discussions in the last week about, you saw that discussion about the kind of, it looks like a bulletproof vest, but then it like becomes an airbag when you crash. But then I'm like, okay, it's a kilo of extra weight. Riders are clearly removing weight from their bike and in all likelihood, reducing safety by a little in doing so as well, in the way it's being presented in cycling right now. But that's one of those things where you gotta then think about, okay, temperature control. It's suddenly going to be fucking hot when you put that on.
I'm sorry, if you hit that concrete ditch or a rock at 70 kph, that thing ain't doing shit.
On all the presentations of that product, right, the people fall over with it. Like, sorry, but riders aren't standing still. They're not riding 12k an hour. They're riding 60k an hour, 70k an hour. Remco was going 78, I think, according to Strava. I think Luke pulled that up today. Like, also, that's fucking fast.
Riders don't give a fuck about doing their collarbone. Like, okay, like they miss races, but they literally get the surgery done. They're back on the train in 10 days, you know, wind Paris Bay 2 months later. Like, they're not... Okay, they don't want to do it. I'm not saying that they obviously don't want to break their collarbone, but they're not kept up at night about breaking their collarbone. What they're kept up at night about is running off a descent like that, and then anything can happen, much worse than a collarbone. And that did for some of these riders because, we have these provisional injuries, but there's not been too many updates so far this afternoon, and really best wishes to all those involved. And particularly Vingegaard, Vine, and Steph Kras, because they appear to be the most badly hurt. But really to all of them, and I hope all of them make a full and complete recovery, and are pain free, and they're back on the bike or back living normally as soon as possible, because it was very, very scary, and almost lucky. Like there's luck and bad luck. Like Roglic, 2 days in a row, crash at like 65 kilometers an hour plus, he gets straight back up. And then, Vine is on the other end of the spectrum, not his fault at all, and he's much more badly injured than Roglic, but also it could have been worse. When I first saw the crash, I really thought, this could be really bad, like really, really bad. So, six one half does the other.
It is horrible that the standard has become that we react to a medical bulletin with four fractures. Oh, it's only that. Like with Vingegaard, that was the reaction, which that's crazy that that has to be the reaction. And I fully agree. I wish everybody that crashed a full recovery. Also the riders that crashed, Helder Prijs, Gerben Thijssen broke his ankle. Findel Bar broke her ankle at Ronde de Mouscron, I think, last week as well. There's just so many big ass injuries at the moment. And it's just there's something that is causing more crashes, and whether it's the nervousness in the peloton, the behavior in the peloton, or in my opinion, at least for a partially responsibility of race safety still, like Thierry Gouvenou of the Tour de France route guy was already like, it's all because the riders are riding differently, stuff like that. I think he specifically said something according to the gears as well, which it's kind of true, but this is also the guy that that defended his own race design, where there was a corner in the last sprint, when he said, corners make sprints safer. That was also fucking bullshit. So, like, there has to be consistency across the board, and everybody needs to look into their own pockets to get the safer. Because, like, this is also... I spoke to Findel Barra yesterday about potential reasons for this. We went over every single one of the potential topics of, like, what could be better in cycling. And when it comes to equipment, I'm going to get shit on for saying this, by the way, but these brakes break faster in rain. Fully agree, right?
Yeah. Will they work?
But if riders know that they can brake faster, do they not have the behavior of, I'm going to brake as late as possible, trying to be the one that brakes as late as possible in doing so?
Yeah, I mean, you can probably compare it. If you watch a helicopter shot of the approach to hairpins, and you see how riders approach hairpins now, and it's like if you try to approach a hairpin like that on carbon clinches or carbon tubs with rim brakes back in the day with a bit of rain, like you'll just go straight through a hairpin. So, yeah, they can brake later. But I don't know. I also, there's the behavioral aspect as well. Like, if you go compare with so many favorites here yesterday and like top guys, and then you look at Catalunya. I swear, Catalunya, everyone on the descents, Poggi, UAE went to the front. Everyone was chilling. And I don't remember. They're not as dangerous in Catalunya. They weren't as steep. I accept that. But I'm just, it's also a behavioral thing as well. Like, if there's four top GC favorites, it's also impossible for all four to be at the front.
Yep.
And that, you know, that really was a single file descent, maybe. Like, Catalunya, they're just doing single file descents. So I don't know, Benji. I also, maybe some DSs, there could be a risk reward analysis of like who is really losing races by ceding a few positions on a descent. I'm not talking like really getting dropped on a descent, but just like who's, are you losing races 45, 50 Ks from the finish? Is it not about that? Is it about avoiding crashes? I don't know. It's really complicated.
But in Basque Country, you have historically seen splits on the descent as well that have led to things. But then again, maybe not on the stage that we had yesterday. So I'm not sure that argument fits on that one specifically. But I think it sucks very much that it happened. There's definitely things that can be better across the board. But at first, I just want everybody to recover as fast as possible, to be honest.
Yeah, that discussion could be had. I personally don't think there's much argument to say that the exit of that corner was acceptable, because there weren't many climbs yesterday. There weren't many descents on the parkour, you know, and to have that level of dangerous furniture on the exit of a corner like that, I don't think is acceptable.
I would be extremely interested in knowing how this safer organization of the UCI is set up, because I'm a very big fan of centralized data on crashes and so forth. And I feel like that should be part of an independent organization like SAFER to be able to apply that across all races, the advice from that same board. You know, does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. But you'd think that, it's the UCI job and the CPA to check the course. But anyway, we'll move on to today's stage. Benji already mentioned also the Lando crash out. That was pre-coverage. We don't know exactly how it happened, but it was not just a light crash either. He was stretched away in a neck brace. So very unfortunate for him, you know, local rider.
Yeah.
And a big chance to a minimum podium this race. So also incredibly important for the Tour de France. So hopefully Lando comes back soon as possible. Today's stage, 158Ks. Opakua was the first climb, 6.2K, 6%, 40Ks in. Then like some Misk Valley for about 80Ks. I'm looking at yesterday's stage. Not very helpful. Start again. 177Ks, finishing in Amorebieta at Chano. They start on a plateau for 40Ks, then a descent, then another valley around the finish line. Then they do the Urkiola climb, 5.6Ks, 9.1%, category one climb, quite difficult, before a step descent around the finish line again. And then they go and do two laps of the Muniketagaina climb.
That name, bro.
That's a tough one. 3.4K, 7.3%. They do it twice. The last one is 13K from the finish. The little kicker, uphill fossilite drag on a highway, about 5Ks from home. Leading GC before the stage was Schielmoser by process of elimination, literally. Ayuso, 4 seconds behind him. Kevin Vauquelin and Schachmann on 6 seconds. McNulty 13, Armin Rell 14, Bilbao 15, Gregoire 18. So very, very tight gaps, even Del Toro on 32, because basically, I don't even know. Well, I can't remember the time loss. To be honest, I stopped. I don't give a fuck about GC here anymore. So
same.
Yeah. But Menchie's, I should also say for completeness, Menchie's, the Breg was allowed to ride for it yesterday. Menchie's won because they were already ahead from that breakaway.
Which was, like, nobody cared anymore who would win the stage, but that the breakaway was able to ride for the stage, even though they would have been caught otherwise, was fucking stupid, in my opinion.
Yeah, a little bit strange. A little bit strange. But the show must go on. And yeah, we had... But today, actually, you know, I was feeling pretty down and about everything, to be honest. And I was really not fussed about this race. I liked, I even watch it. And today's stage is actually really good. It really was entertaining. Got to say, the coverage that was shown. And when coverage started, was there even a break formed when coverage started, Benji? Or you were in the car? I don't think there was.
I don't think there was. I think there was an attack from Cousin Del Toro on that climb that you mentioned with the not-crazy name. And that was the first move I noticed.
That's right. So, obviously, yeah, teams now being super aggressive with really... There's two strong teams here now. Trek for Schelmoser and UAE with McNulty, Ayuso, and Del Toro. They're the two dominant teams here. And yeah, Kuss went on the Urquiola. I presume it was him because Visma were pacing. This is pre-coverage. Del Toro goes with him. They go over the top, get to the descent, get to the valley and realize, pull up stumps because they ain't going anywhere in a, how long is it? 30K valley, Trek chasing, one assumes. And then they get to the first rep of the Muna Ketigaina. Look at that climb. And basically all hell breaks loose. There's a counter move. And multiple attacks were going in this valley that had Steinemeyer Schmidt, who's back in action. He won a stage here last year. Harrison Wood on Cofidis. Bergado, who was in the break yesterday. Tuschfeld, Asperen, Ivan Kobo, Jimmy Janssens, and Jose Manuel Diaz. So should Trek have invested so much to chase this, Benji?
I think it's fine to invest to chase that. Your rider's in the leader jersey. I don't actually know how close these riders were in GC, so that's the only reason that I'm not sure
not
how much
close.
they should have... okay, well...
One, oh, 130, but that's a big gap here.
Yeah, they never really got 130, so maybe they started pacing it too hard, if that makes sense. But then again, if you can keep it relatively close, then maybe you can let it go out a little bit later. But nah, I think you can let the gap go out a little bit, keep it within maybe 130, stuff like that, because you're going to get to the climbs and you're going to have attacks in your group anyway, you know? So I didn't think these guys were going to get the jersey that way.
I think they were thinking Schelmo's a stage win, which is, you know, I think they were thinking at that point.
It's fair to think that though, eh? Because he's got the sprint.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not saying he couldn't. But I'm saying...
Spoilers, he couldn't.
Well, he in theory he could, but then you got to think what's going to happen... UAE are sitting in the wheels here. You're spending your domestiques. The argument is also then if you don't spend, what's your man's name? Who's here? If you don't spend Bernard or Fellini or Mollema here, then they ain't making it over. And Baggioli.
Exactly.
He's lost two watts per kilo. Maybe we'll see that in autumn. like it's actually incredible that Baggioli is like a non-factor in this stage.
Yeah.
It's actually unbelievable. But
he was
anyway,
a solid domestique, though.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But he came second in Lombardy by Pog in October. It's a big group at the end. But yeah, I accept he was in a domestique role here. Attacks on the climb. The breakaways brought back by attacks on the climb. Del Toro, I think, or Arrieta was going. UAE were going over and over again. Maybe even Soler getting into moves.
Yep.
And I couldn't even see it exactly. I don't know if he even attacked on the descent. But basically... Le Cerf, William Le Cerf, who, by the way, the fact that he didn't crash yesterday was crazy. He was like just held it up, and I think he must be very, very good on the bike downhill or handling Le Cerf. He attacks, he's joined by the remnants of the breakaway, Schmidt, Stalnemittet, Bergado, and as well as Arrieta or Betragos with him. So now I'm Brandon Rivera. So GC guys were getting amongst it here, Benji. And this was now Trek were getting put under real pressure because UAE tactics were good today.
Exactly, and that first Munich-Itagaina, whatever it's called, climb, showed a real indication that UAE's attempted rolling attacks this entire bloody stage from this point onwards, because you said it, Arrieta went, Del Toro went, but also in this group, Mark Soler is present in that group. So we're seeing every single rider except McNulty and Ayuso going and rolling into attacks right here. And that attack keeps going for a little bit, but like you said, Little Trek is in control. And at that point, actually, Bajoli, speak of the devil, he was at the front pacing in the peloton. He caught that group with Soler and Lecer. And the thing is, when it happens, when they get caught, tempo goes down a little bit because Trek's like, okay, we don't need to super pace anymore. Another attack follows with 30 kilometers to go. And that includes Mauro Schmidt, Stonemeter, Burgodo again. It's like when that group got caught, these riders attack again, and they get caught again, which then leads to other attacks. Once again, Stonemeter, Kwiatkowski, Rocha, Ibon Ruiz from Ken Pharma, and Mark Donovan. And this group actually stayed the way for, I would say, a solid 5 to 10 kilometers, because we were closing in towards that second ascent of the... Why am I doing this to myself? Munich-Itagaina climb. And to get it over with when it comes to the breakaway, brake shatters at the foot because Rocha is trying to drop everybody. There was one rider, I think Kwiatko, that was able to follow him a bit longer, but Rocha was the strongest one in the group apparently on that climb. And once again, UAE showing up at the front of the peloton group here. So attacks are flowing again, but it's DSM that launches with, well, what's his name? The Narwhal is back? You're muted, my friend.
Sorry, I was too excited. And Narwhal's back. I haven't seen him since he dropped Van der Poel in a descent in the Giro in 22, or 21. And he was being, well, then, and then coming from behind was Del Toro again, or Arrieta. Every UAE rider, by the way, looks the same. Like, literally, they all have their hoods set up exactly the same. They're all like lanky. They're all very similar, especially Arrieta and Del Toro. I bet it was Del Toro, I think. And he has Oscar Onley in the wheel. And I'm thinking, ooh, Oscar Onley, winner on Willunga. And Oscar Onley gets that group attacks. Skelmoser and Trek plays pretty well. They've got Schachmann attacking as well, big attack. And basically, Gegenhardt, I think, had shut it down pretty well. And Skelmoser was left isolated for the last 300, 400 meters of the climb. I actually do wonder whether attack would have been the best version of defense for Skelmoser. Mm-hmm. Like, if you really felt good, then maybe you want to thin it out on the on that final climb of the name which cannot be pronounced. Because in
no,
the
don't
end,
warm your way out of this pronunciation.
I'm
you're
not
trying
doing,
it.
I've had enough of it. And he stops, he gets to that group. We see Ethan H is in the group. We see Carlos Rodriguez is there. And a big group comes back. Santi pushes on the descent. Schachmann does what Van Aert did in the Hayes-Cabell stage.
Yeah.
Literally saying it's a Bahrain rider again. Santi comes through. Schachmann, one corner, overbreaks way too much. Just like freaks out. I don't think he's a terrible descender, but there's one corner, he just overbreaks way too much. Santi gets a gap. He's on the moto bumper. And then Schachmann chases Santi this whole descent with Ayuso, Del Toro, Skelmoser, in fact, in his wheel. And that kind of helped. And that's with Van Aert, but chasing Bilbao and the Hayes-Cabell finish. And then we get to this valley, and I'm thinking, Benji, one thing. Skelmoser's fucked. It's a highway.
Yeah.
It's rolling false light terrain. The group's like 45, 50 guys. UAE got three or four. I was like, he is in big trouble here.
Yeah, exactly, because he's isolated. And I didn't see Gegenhardt at that point. So whether he was still at the back of the group or not, I didn't know. And I was thinking maybe Ineos, Hayter, Carlos Rodriguez. Carlos is here in GC. He's on 50 seconds in GC, I think. It's a shock that he's still here because if you look at his hand, I don't think he should have started a few days ago anymore. But that being said, the fact that they're still in the group, I would have offered up Carlos Rodriguez, not his GC position, but to somewhat control the group to try and get Hayter a chance here again. Because Hayter 2 years ago can't be gone. Hayter Romandy last year can't be gone, even though it kind of feels like he is at the moment. And then the 70,000th attack of Del Toro happens. Del Toro starts to attack, and Del Toro starts to attack again. And I feel like this man attacked 17 billion times, but it's really Trek. First of all, Skelmoser at the front when Del Toro does that move. Skelmoser kind of responds to that himself. But when he's caught, when Del Toro is caught, we see a perfect move by Brandon McNulty. He attacks over the top of Skelmoser, who obviously stops because he's caught Del Toro, and he doesn't instantly respond to McNulty attacking, and then he realizes I have to pace again. So then Skelmoser starts to pace behind McNulty, and then we see a man, a savior for Skelmoser, show up on the right side of our screen, passing rider by rider in the peloton. Looks like he's still eating something or something. Gegen Hart, right? He was back?
Yeah. Gegen Hart did an excellent job in this race for Skelmoser. Without him, I think Skelmoser loses time. Like, really, it's inevitable he would have lost time. And you don't just easily bring back someone like Brandon McNulty on your own. And so, yeah, Gegen Hart, hats off to him. He had a heart. Not only is he coming back from a bad crash last year, he himself had a hard crash in this very race. And he's stuck here and he's helping, you know, he's at a GC himself. And he helped Skelmoser to the point of exhaustion. So that was really, really cool to see. Then a tunnel happens. McNulty's clear. Armirel or Decathlon had been closing him down. The tunnel finishes. A Kern Farmer rides off the front and Brandon McNulty's no longer there. So we're like, what's going on? Still chaos. More attacks. Del Toro goes again. Carlito. Carlos Rodriguez with one hand. He'd been chatting to Hayter. You can see they've been chatting. You can go for it. Gets to the wheel of Del Toro after Del Toro attacked really hard. Hesitates maybe 1 second. And then decides to go over the top of him. Don't know if it would have made too much of a difference. But he goes, gets a nice gap. There's a double right-hand corner. He rails. But unfortunately for him, Shackman leads it out behind and catches Rodriguez, who I think did a really good job. You can't blame what he did. I think it was the right play from Ineos too, because he ain't going to do a great lead out. But unfortunately for him, Shackman brings him back. Gregoire comes out of the wheel of Pacher, who was in front of him, and Gregoire just nailed Shackman on the line. He was very, very strong. Aulard comes up the barrier second, Shackman third, Pacher fourth, Aaron Baru fifth, couldn't win a sprint against himself. Zanti sixth.
Hey.
Bilbao seventh. It's true. Like, Aaron Baru should have been going in the kickers in the chaos.
But he's like Kung. He's like Stefan Kung. Kung is everybody's pacing mate. Adam Wu is everybody's lead out.
Yep. Hausen? Eighth. Battistella, ninth. Carlos Rodriguez, 10th. Hayter finishes 15th. Probably be disappointed with that. I would say, you know, Hausen finishing 8th. You'd want to be in the top three in this sprint, I think. But he said he hasn't been training sprints. But to be honest, like, the strange thing is, like, Hayter's 10-minute watts per kilo must be really good. And 20-minute watts per kilo must be really good. But the real news is Gregoire's first World Tour win, the 21-year-old on Groupama FDJ. He is one of my personal favorite riders. He'd won the GC of Carcajou de Dunkerque and the Tour de Limousin last year, but you know, those Arnaud Démare type races, there's a step up here. Second in Fort Nardeche Classic earlier in the year behind Juan Ayuso, and today wins the stage of Pays Vasco.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Aux enfants de la patrie, la jour de gloire est arrivé. Allez, Romain! Allez. Vive Romain Gregoire. I really like Gregoire. I think he's a great rider. And,
where did I deserve this?
His ten, even in Torino, he's climbing like, yeah, really. A TT 21, really nice.
He's a very good rider. It's as simple as that, and it's good to see his first World Tour victory. I'd rate these kind of stage. I'd rate this on like a Romandy reduced sprint kind of vibe, kind of stage. That
it's just like Schelling and Schmidt winning here.
Yeah, which it's still a World Tour victory. It's still a step up from the victories he's had so far. So that's the one that knocks the door down, and there's many others that will follow, and I'm curious how good he will be in Ardennes, for example, in the future, whether that's already going to be this year, whether he's up there with the best, or whether that will be next year. Don't know, but I'm very hyped to see him win. And I feel like I've had that a few times with French riders in the last few weeks. Like Lapeyre's victory, same thing. First Vuelta victory, probably going to be more in the future. But also it's one of those like lower Vuelta level victories, but that doesn't mean other ones can't follow necessarily, because he's also still relatively young. Then Evan Cossieu had his first UCI Pro win.
Yeah. So he's knocking on the door, he's good in Provence or Passage or whatever.
So it's...
Where's Volky? So yeah, to the GC standings, Schelmoser leads still. Schachmann moves closer though with the bonies, coming four bonies. Schachmann could have been in the GC lead with about 3 inches off it. He's on 2 seconds. Ayuso is on 4 seconds. Volk is on 6 seconds, another French rider. Very highly touted. Gregoire on 8 seconds. McNulty, 13 seconds. Armorel, 14 seconds. Bilbao, 15. Aaron Beru, 23. Jagat, 30. Del Toro, 32. I'm looking for GC relevant guys. Santi, 37. Hindley, 47. Soler, 47. Bran Rivera, 121. That'll do. That'll do. If you're that far back, I think you're going to struggle. All right, tomorrow's stage, the classic Eibar. You know, this is the stage I was probably looking forward to most out of a few stages this year, to see Remco, Roglic, and Jonas go against each other and against a very, very strong UA team with Vine in fantastic shape, but not to be. Instead, well, it's still the same stage, 138Ks, and it's 5K, 7% descent. 9K's 5.6%, but it's a fake news climb. There's steeper parts. 10K valley, not that long at all, before the Krabbelin, the hardest climb in the whole race. 5K's 9.5%, with 3K's at about 11.5%. Very, very difficult. Short valley, Trabakua, 3.3K's, 7%. Then some rolling hills before the Izuir Arate climb. 4K's 9.1%, with some steeper pinches in there. Another descent in the Urkaregi climb, 5Ks, 4.6%, before a false flat, 10Ks to the finish. What do you think will happen tomorrow, Benji?
I think tomorrow is when UAE wins GC.
Yeah.
They've got 17 billion people in the top 20. Like, they've got four riders in the top 20, four riders within 1 minute on a parkour where team-based strategies really works. Like, you named the climbs, you named everything, but it's a kind of stage where you look at the early climbs, you're like, okay, we can form a breakaway with a UAE rider in there. Trek will have to find a way to control all these attacks. Maybe they'll just pace the first two climbs. Maybe they'll try and keep the gap. Maybe they'll just send someone in the breakaway, like Hirschi, for example, for UAE 2 years ago. That kind of stuff can happen. And then Krabbelin is the one, the big hitter, the very hard climb, where you can use that climb to bridge towards your rider in the breakaway. And this time around, it's also... you have those climbs, the last three climbs. There's hard climbs in there, like Izua can also be like a jumping point to the breakaway if you don't want to risk doing it midway to stage on Krabbelin yet. But there's multiple of those like attacking points, and you don't have Arate at the end of the finish anymore, eh? At the end of the stage, which makes it even more satellite rider possible, no?
Yeah, like they should just try to drop every Trek Domestik on the first climb. It's harder than the climb today, the finishing climb. So Marc Soler should just jump full gas on the first climb.
Yep.
And then it's going to be a very, very hard day for Schelmoser and Trek.
Del Toro, 20 attacks again.
I think... where's Only?
The Decathlon should follow. They've got three riders in the top 25.
Only's on 4 minutes. So Only could win like Gurdu won from the break against Roglic.
Yeah.
Decathlon, who have they got for GC?
They've got Armila in there.
Gaudin is still here.
And Lapeyre in 26th.
Gaudin's still in the race.
Yeah, but where is he? He's on 5 minutes 49, sorry, but...
yeah, but you never know why. I think Del Toro wins GC. And I'm going with Only from the breakaway.
Okay. I think that's very possible. I think Del Toro winning GC is very possible as well. That was actually one of the names I would have taken myself, but I'm going to go with... I love your Del Toro pick. Why did you do that? I'm not okay with that.
I think he's stronger than Ayuso.
I'm going to go with Ayuso just because of the fact that you stole my Del Toro pick before you realized I wanted it. But that being said...
This is a real big opportunity.
Yeah.
And test for the two French guys, French young guys we just mentioned.
Yep.
Grégoire Vauquelin, a French rider, has never won a World Tour race in GC since it was called World Tour.
I don't see winning for them, to be honest.
If they were going to win one... Tomorrow, with no Vingegaard, no Roglic, no Pogacar, no Evenepoel, with Schelmose leading GC, I also don't think they'll do it. But it's a huge opportunity, and I really think I would love to see it. So,
but even podiuming would be fantastic for those riders.
Yeah,
in this
that'd
race.
Be huge. How do you think Shackman looks? Come all the way back.
He looks all the way back, but those grounds tomorrow are a different story.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. This whole five stages doesn't really matter because tomorrow is so different and so hard. I mean, maybe Pale Bilbao and Santi are actually the best climbers in this race.
Is it year 8? 13 might still move up into top 5.
Yeah. Like, and with the technical descents as well, like, so many, literally, I think possible to win GC is at least 5 riders. Maybe more. I think possible to win GC is a long list, so. It's unfortunately at the same time as Paris-Roubaix-Femmes, according to Luke finishing, so that's a bit of a shame because Catalunya and Gent-Wevelgem, they stagger it, the Montjuic-Barcelona stage. That's a bit of a shame, but we'll cover both in the recap pod tomorrow.
Yeah, we'll try to watch both.
Try to watch both.
I'm going to be so fucked because I'm riding the Paris-Roubaix challenge tomorrow morning.
Really?
Yeah, the 70K version. So the last 8 sectors. But it's like 9 sectors because the 8th one is for some reason 2 sectors in one. So that's going to be fun.
Is there any other news? Other news was a report from Daniel Benson that he says Classics revelation Lawrence Pithy will join Bora Hansgrohe in 2025. Which I guess if that's true, goes to show they're a serious player in the market, like Little Trekker. It's no longer just the Visma, the UAE, the Ineos of old. Little Trek and Bora, I would say, are in the market making moves of equivalence or maybe even bigger. So,
but also, they don't have a real classics team at the moment. They're like, Meus can do, Evelyn Kunik kind of vibes, but he ain't winning Ronde van Vlaanderen or top 10 in that race. So, I see that they have the need for that as well in their roster. And with Pollitt going, with Sagan going a few years ago, they now have to fill that spot. I think Piffy's a good rider for that. I am a bit worried, though, because outside of Sagan, I don't vividly remember, and maybe Haller one time, or was that on Bahrain that Haller was good? Like, most classics riders on this team don't actually show up.
Yeah. They did it with Sagan, but that was when Patchy Villa was there. I don't know. I'd have to look through it. They've been good in the Ardennes. They're a pretty good Ardennes team. But the Cobble Classic's not maybe their forte. But Pithy certainly, 21, he's been unbelievable in the spring. So he is probably the biggest Classics prospect out of contract.
Probably. But it's also like, we have seen his limits. So now I'm wondering, how can they evolve past that? Because his limits were in the likes of Kuurne, in the likes of Gent-Wevelgem, that once it got towards the last 25, last 15% of the race, of the hill zone, he cracked while the other favorites didn't. So a bit of percentage extra, he can definitely get over that, but those two races are not the same as RVV necessarily, but I do recall him being relatively okay in RVV, no? Wasn't he in a group at some point? One of the other classics? But there was one classic outside of the sprint once, outside of Koenigent, that I did see him where I would have thought he might have dropped already. I don't remember where.
I'm just looking to test your theory about Bora Yeah, they haven't top 10 Flanders in... I'm still clicking.
Since Sagan won? No?
Since Sagan came sixth in 2018.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, Pithy is that guy. Well, I think Pithy can top 10 Tour of Flanders in the future. That's not exactly a hot take. He'd be hoping for better than that.
Yeah, I think so.
But yeah, that's,
I think trying to win Gent Wevelgem, trying to win Kuhn, those kind of things is definitely possible. And how much he can gain in an RV V-style race, I don't actually know. He is pretty tall, no? He's 1.85 meter, but he's not the...
Not that
he's big. A skinny 185 rider, no?
Yeah, he's not that big. He's not like 80. He's not like Florian Vermeersch or anything like that.
Okay. He's like Van der Poel.
Yeah, but yeah.
Weird comparison, but I think you know better. What I mean. What? Better?
Yeah, because I like Lawrence.
He's not like Macho. Come on. Too much of a favor to like this year.
Take it or leave it. What? Spitting on the fans thing is a bit strange, no? Anyway, well, it's like you gotta be careful. If you don't clap and cheer every time he rides past, you be careful. All right, that's enough from us. You'll see you with the Paris-Vevey Fam recap tomorrow, as well as Basque Country, one of the best stages of the year. Normally, chaos will ensue, I think, with UAE attacking. So, hope you enjoyed the pod, and we'll see you with the recaps then. Ciao.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.